And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WEXU. I'm Michael Marks. The 2019 edition of Photo Focus this fall, the Carnegie in Covington, features 44 artists with the title of Auto Update, Photography in the Electronic Age. The focus is on digital technology's impact on photography and the disruption of art making and news cycles in a media-obsessed world. So joining Cincinnati Edition to talk about it are Photo Focus Deputy Director of Exhibitions and Programming, Carissa Barnard. Welcome, Carissa.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And we also have on the phone with us Photo Focus Symposium Speaker and International Center of Photography Dean Emeritus, Fred Richard. Hi, Fred.
How are you?
Doing well. So glad you could join us. So let's start, Carissa, with this little bit. In the news release that was sent out promoting Photo Focus, it was noted that the event is inspired by the, quote, prescient 1994 book, Metamorphoses, Photography in the Electronic Age. That was 25 years ago. So I'm wondering, what was that book prescient about all those years ago?
Well, so it's interesting. I think that right now we have the benefit of Fred being here because Fred is really the expert on where he predicted we would be 25, 30 years ago with his writings. I think what we wanted to do as part of this exhibition is really look at where we've come since the introduction of the digital camera and Adobe Photoshop, what that landscape has looked like for visual artists, but also how it has translated into kind of media culture at large, right? Deep fake, how are we looking at manipulating imagery into the newsfeed, what we actually see being not actually real, being able to tell the difference. And so pushing those boundaries, where are we compared to where we thought we were going to be? So really it's a historical kind of look, but also a future look.
And Fred, as Chris has said, you were even more ahead of the game than 1994 book. 35 years ago, in 1984, you wrote an article for the New York Times Magazine on the perils of the coming digital revolution. So take us back to that year, 1984, and let us know what you were seeing then that gave clues to what we're seeing now.
Well, at that point, it was about 6 years before Photoshop. It was high-tech machines. They were $500,000 systems, which would manipulate photographs electronically, and it did it in such a way, it was very quick, it was very effective, and you couldn't really tell the difference. So I wrote a piece for the New York Times Magazine saying, okay, you know, it's now time to think about this, because if we want to keep the credibility of photography, we've got to do something. We have to label photographs, we have to think of them differently, it's kind of like the automobile with a seatbelt. You know, it's the automobile may be great, but we still put in the seatbelt, you know, this kind of digital imaging may be great, but we also have to take some precautions, which unfortunately we never did. And then I wrote a book on the subject in 1990 called In Our Own Image, The Coming Revolution in Photography, in which the prediction was that we would start to use photography to make the world look like what we wanted the world to be as opposed to what it was. And again, we would lose the credibility. And I led several campaigns to label manipulated photographs in the 90s. And I've been working on this for a very long time, but, you know, it's like when I first published the article in 84, 1.6 million copies of the New York Times Magazine were printed, and I got three letters to the editor. So it's the same with climate change. We're very slow to act proactively, and now we have the issues of deepfakes, and can we believe the news? Can we believe imagery, fake news? And now we even have artificial intelligence systems. There's a website, thispersondoesnotexist.com, where every time you click it, there's a new synthetic image of somebody who never existed that looks just like a photograph. So it's we're really in kind of perilous times at this point in terms of credibility.
Fred, tell us what a deepfake is.
Well, a deepfake is, there are computer programs now that could be used in video and in photography, both and for audio, which synthesize either imagery or audio that seems to have been recorded but never was recorded. So deepfakes, one of the problems with it is that there are people now putting celebrity actresses in pornographic movies that they were never in, and there's very little that they can do about it, either legally or practically. There's a video of former President Obama giving a speech that he never gave. Online, you could hear John F. Kennedy giving the speech that he would have given in Dallas November 22nd, 1963, had he not been assassinated. Wow. So then the question is, you know, what's real, what's not? How do we know if somebody actually said what they said? And a lot of people in power at this point are just calling everything fake news that they don't agree with. So I began in photography because it was recording the media. I thought of it as a quotation from appearances. You know, you don't have to agree with what the photograph's showing in terms of your point of view, but it was a fact that that happened, and now it's no longer that. And unfortunately, it's the people with the least power. You know, that one of the founders of Doctors Without Borders said, without a photograph, we've never been able to prove a massacre happened. And now if you don't believe photographs, there are no massacres, you know, meaning that the people who are massacred have no recourse. And, you know, to me, it just never made sense that we would diminish the credibility of the photograph that way or the video that way. And that's where we're at right now with artificial intelligence. In fact, there's a painting which was made by an algorithm that recently sold for $450,000 at Christie's. There's no human artist. It's an algorithm. And so it raises issues of what is art. You know, if an algorithm could make the music, could make the painting, and so on, what are humans doing?
And Fred, you sort of touched on this when you talked about 1.6 million copies of New York Times Magazine being published back in 1984 with your article about the perils of the coming digital revolution, but you said you only got three letters to the editor based on that. So has the public's awareness of this issue increased in recent years, or do you think we're still a little bit behind on understanding what may be at stake?
No, I think the public has become increasingly skeptical of all mass media, whatever the source, whether it's text, image, video, whatever it is. And that's exactly what should not have happened, because the problem was that the industry itself, the media industry, the journalistic industry, would have had to act proactively to put up labels. You know, this image is manipulated, this one is not manipulated, this is what the difference is, to tell the people. You know, we have to be teaching media literacy to 8-year-old children, which we're not doing. We're teaching, you know, only text. We don't teach how do you interpret videos or photographs, for example, you know, to children. So that we're right now in a society where if it's published in the New York Times or it's on social media, for many people, there's no difference in terms of the authority. And so it's very hard for democracy to operate when we don't have credible information that we all rely upon. We could disagree on what to do about it. You know, during the Vietnam War, some people thought the war was justifiable, some not. But we did agree that what was in the photographs actually happened. And now that's no longer the case. And it's unfortunate. It's really like killing the goose that lays the golden egg.
You wrote an interesting article for Time magazine more recently that I thought was interesting in the context of this conversation, because it wasn't so much about altering photographs. It seemed to be more about simple editorial decisions in newsrooms about the power or the message that photographs can convey to a news consumer. And so, for example, in that article, you use the mugshot of Brock Turner. And then you show another photo that was widely circulated in the media about him that shows this convicted rapist in his suit and tie. So can you talk about the role that just photography in general plays in news coverage and in shaping public opinion?
Well, it goes in different directions. There was a recent campaign from students at Columbine High School in which they signed a pledge that if there is violence in the high school and you know, something happens to them, they want the photographs to be shown. They don't want it to be made invisible. They don't want to just see yellow police tape and ambulances. They want to be seen. And generally, publications don't do that. So the question is, are we really showing people what's going on? In the case of Brock Turner, the issue was, you know, this is a young man of privilege. And they, you know, the media were choosing to show the suit and tie kind of yearbook photo instead of the mugshot. And the question is, you know, why were they doing that? So there are many, many issues of choice that are being made. And it's really important that we discuss it. And we have a media that does what's necessary for us to know what's going on in the world, as opposed to camouflaging it really from us. At this point, the war in Afghanistan is the longest war in American history, but there's no iconic photograph from the war in Afghanistan. And there are many from the Vietnam War, for example. So in a sense, we don't know what's going on. We have more and more and more data, but we have less and less of a sense of really what's going on in the world, even in our own country. You know, do people in Texas know about Chicago? Do they know about Atlanta and so on and so forth? Cincinnati, do we know each other? And in my opinion, I think we know less than we used to, even though we have billions and billions of images made every day.
It's a fascinating perspective. Carrie, Photo Focus will feature Fred as part of the symposium, because this is more than just an exhibition. It's an exhibition and symposium. So in addition to Fred's perspective that he's been kind enough to share with us here today, what are some of the other topics that will be explored?
So I think Fred, just hearing Fred kind of is exactly what Photo Focus is trying to accomplish with the symposium. It's igniting a conversation about the world through photography. Experts like Fred will populate the entire program. We will start out with a conversation with curators and directors from regional institutions. Matt will be involved in that as well. Matt Distel from the Carnegie. We will have Michael Vetter from the Indianapolis Museum of Art, Newfields, Alice Gray Stites from 21C Museum, and Joey Tang representing Columbus College of Art and Design. We will also have curators from MoMA, Michelle Kuo. We will also have scientists talking about deepfakes and conversations with writers and editors. The symposium is populated by voices that are national voices. I think the big one for us is also to mention Trevor Paglen, who's our keynote lecturer, our artist keynote at 5 o'clock on Saturday, and talking about mass surveillance, talking about, Fred mentioned, kind of the ImageNet. Trevor just recently did a project called ImageNet Roulette, which is a really fascinating project around labeling images and what the computer mind is actually able to generate based on wrong data, based on incorrect, ill-informed data, biases. And so 600,000 images were removed from ImageNet based on this project that he did and launched last week. So it's really topical. I think that's exactly what the symposium is about. It's about these conversations that have to do with current political, social issues, in addition to what's happening in the visual arts landscape. And that is exactly what you'll find in conversations every hour, on the hour, all day on Saturday.
And we are now joined by Matt Distel. He is the Carnegie Exhibitions Director. Matt, how are you?
Very good, thank you.
Okay, so you're a curator.
Yes, I am.
And I'm wondering, what impact has this change and this trend in digital photography had on the way that you put shows together?
Well, in addition to needing to upgrade technology at times, I think it changes the way you talk about things. It even changes the way you talk about painting and drawing and sculpture and other forms of art that aren't necessarily intrinsically linked to that, because it is the way we compose the world around us now. The digital landscape is almost one and the same with our visual landscape at this point. And I think that is obviously going to get filtered down to the artists. And what I'm interested in is, how are the artists in this region handling those changes?
And I'm wondering how more technological advances in photography have affected our understanding of the medium, particularly in what some people might refer to as post-truth and also artificial intelligence.
Yeah, I mean, we have a number of artists who are dealing directly with that, using other outside systems to generate their images. So it's almost a bit of going back to some of the conversations we had around conceptual art early in the 60s, where you're talking about the removal of the artist's hand. What is art when it's not being made by the artist, when the artist is using a proxy to make the work?
And Fred, before we go here in our last moments, you were very prescient with your article in 1984, your book in 1990. You offered some astute analysis in that Time magazine we talked about moments ago. I'm wondering what you might be seeing now about what could become the next big trend or even concern with digital imagery.
No, I think there are many, many. I think surveillance is at the top of the list in terms of facial identification, you know, which is being used widely in certain countries at this point. I'm told that, you know, it's being used for commercial. You can buy things based on your face, and, you know, you could also get arrested based on the recognition by machines. But I think, you know, to me, what's really interesting is the more spiritual dynamic of the idea of who's the author, you know, as Matt was just saying, who's the author of a work of art? If it becomes the algorithm, becomes the author. You know, the algorithms are now winning at chess. They're winning at, you know, many things that humans used to dominate at. You know, what does it mean for art, for the spirit of art, for the spirit of being a human being at this point? And I think that kind of conflict or potential conflict is a really interesting one, because it makes us look back at ourselves and say, what is it to be human? What do we do differently? What do we do better? What do we do more deeply? And it's an interesting moment to ask those questions.
Auto update, photography in the electronic age is on display now at the Carnegie in Covington. There will be a reception and performance this week, October 4th, 2019. The all-day symposium, Auto Update, Photography in the Electronic Age, is Saturday, October 5th. Both events will be held at the Carnegie. They're free, and they are open to the public. We've got full details at WVXU.org inside the Cincinnati Edition tab. So I want to thank Carissa Barnard, Matt Distel, and Fred Richin for joining us today. Very cool.
Thanks
so much.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstrow. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.